It was kind of fun to have this sermon title out on West Saanich Road. You can imagine the reactions of passers-by. Overflowing rice pots and fancy cows? What are those Unitarians up to now? Our daughter drew a picture for me of each. This is the overflowing rice pot and the fancy cow. I'm particularly fond of the fancy cow. I know you can't see it. I'll describe it to you. It sports a pink dress with puffy sleeves, diamond necklace and earrings, and my favorite, the purple high-heeled shoes. Presumably, now that you have heard Faye's story, you understand why this sermon is titled as it is. We are talking about Pongal, the Hindu harvest festival celebrated by the Tamil people in South India. There are actually variants of this festival celebrated in other regions of India, and in fact, some non-Hindu Indians also join in the celebration. But for clarity's sake, I'm going to focus on the way the Tamil people celebrate Pongal in the southeastern Indian state of Tamil Nadu, the Indian Union Territory of Pondicherry, and in Sri Lanka. That is our context for today by culture and geography. For those of you who would like to get your bearings in the landscape of world religions, here's a review. Hinduism is the third largest religion in the world. Christianity is the largest, and Islam is the second largest. You may recall that with your Abrahamic religions, the ones that trace their tradition back to the Hebrew Bible and the days of Abraham and his sons Isaac and Ishmael, within your Abrahamic religions, you have Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. There's also a group of religions called the East Asian religions, which include Shinto, Confucian, and Taoism. Hinduism is in a group of religions referred to as Indian religions. You've got Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism. Hinduism is one of the world's oldest religions. Buddhism evolved from Hinduism, much like Christianity evolved from Judaism. Jesus was a Jew, Buddha was a Hindu. So that's our context then. You've got your Abrahamic religions here, Judaism, Christianity, Islam. You've got your East Asian religions over here, Taoism, Shinto, Confucian, etc. And Hinduism, which is our focus today, is in the Indian traditions, the progenitor of Buddhism. Back to Pongal then. Pongal is the four-day festival in mid-January. It begins on the last day of the Tamil month of Margazi and goes 3 days into the month of Thai. The timing of Pongal is synchronized with the winter solstice. Farmers celebrate the harvest, dedicating their celebration to the sun god Surya as the days begin to get longer and warmer and the sun begins its journey northward again. As Faye mentioned, the first day of Pongal, called Bogi, is for cleaning. On this last day of the month, old things are burned and houses are cleaned and painted and decorated. The second day of Pongal is when the Pongal food is prepared in those new clay pots. The word Pongal means boil over or spill over. The milky rice porridge boils over, symbolizing the warming of the season, as well as material abundance for the household. And Faye mentioned that we're all going to get to taste Pongal later after the service. Thank you, Geeta. The third day, Matu Pongal, is the festival day for the animals. Matu means cow. Cattle are particularly honored for all of that they provide through the harvest, dairy products, fertilizer, plowing, and transport. On Matu Pongal, the cows and bulls are bathed and beautifully decorated with colorful beads, flower garlands, tinkling bells, and are given blessings and food offerings. There's also a special tradition called Kanupidi, in which women and young girls offer colored rice, cooked vegetables, banana, and sweet pongal to the birds, with prayers that their filial ties with their brothers will remain strong, like the ties within the family of crows. The fourth day, Kanam Pongal, is for visiting with friends and family. Kanam means to view. Gifts are given from landlords to the workforce, and special tributes from brothers to their married sisters, in affirmation that strong family ties will continue. Families and friends picnic together. In cities, families go on outings together to the beaches or to amusement parks. As you can tell from Faye's description, the whole festival of Pongal is rich and colorful, fun, celebratory, and joyful. So what might we, Unitarian Universalists, up here in Chile, Canada, learn from this celebration of Pongal? As Faye noted, one of the themes of Pongal that rises to the fore is abundance. I should confess up front that I was a bit flummoxed when I first considered preaching on the theme of abundance. I'm not really a living in abundance kind of a person. I am a worrier, a saver, a glass is half empty kind of a person. I'm always a little suspicious of those church fundraising consultants who talk about replacing an attitude of scarcity with an attitude of abundance, as if you can change the numbers in your bank account with an optimistic point of view. Abundance is not a theme I carry readily. Two scenarios are emblematic of my resistance. Scenario one. Just recently, when I was visiting my mother in Massachusetts for the holidays, we drove past a restaurant called Pongal. I commented to my mother that this was the topic of this upcoming service. I explained to her that Pongal was a festival and also a food. I described the process of cooking the food, how you are supposed to let the pots boil until the rice and milk mixture bubbles and spills over the edges of the pot. As the cook in our family, my mother's instinctive reaction was a distressed, "Ugh, what a mess!" So much for the symbolic message of abundance. My mother is just not a fan of messiness. She made a dust cover for her printer. She taught me from a young age to not put my hands on the walls because you leave oil stains on the wallpaper. The instant that grease gets on the stove, she wipes it off, knowing that grease can get burned onto the stove when it's left there and gets heated later. My mother keeps a neat house, and mess, especially messes that are hard to clean, are distressing. I learned this deep in my bones when I was growing up. Whoever said, "There's no use crying over spilt milk," was flat out wrong. Water, maybe, but not milk. Spilt milk, especially if it gets into the carpet or upholstery, smells awful and you can't get it out. It's completely reasonable to cry over spilt milk. I had to laugh at my mother's reaction to the Pongal image of abundance, but I must admit that I thought the same thing when I first heard it described. The fact that the Pongal that Faye ate was cooked outside instead of inside eased my mind considerably. Ridiculous, I know, but there you are. Scenario two. Faye described the kolam, or in North India they call them rangoli, those beautiful geometric patterns designed on the ground with rice flour. I've seen photos, intricate, colorful, detailed, lovely. Those painstakingly designed creations are swept away every morning. I've heard of similar practices in Buddhist temples, how the dissolution of such a design is supposed to symbolize the impermanence of life. I kind of get it with my head, but in my heart, in my body, when I think of those lovely designs being swept away, I get a physical sinking sensation in my throat, my heart, and my stomach. It pains me to think of it, like that horrible feeling you get when you're a kid and your sandcastle gets knocked down, or when the string of your balloon slips off your wrist, and before you can realize what's happening, the balloon zips up and away beyond your reach forever. I don't know. Maybe there are some kids who think, cool, that was fun. I want to let go of another balloon. But I was not that kid. As I sat with these images, the pot boiling over, the swept away designs, the vanishing balloon, two opposing groups of emotions emerged. On the one hand is the attitude of anxiety, tense, negative, stingy, controlling, closed-fisted, holding on. On the other hand, the attitude of abundance, relaxed, grateful, generous, celebratory, open-handed, letting go. Moving from one posture to the other is most certainly a spiritual challenge. Joan Poole's, a Catholic sister, calls openness the attitude and condition that is at the heart of spirituality. Openness. I'm reminded of that paradoxical notion that living in abundance requires letting go. To receive, you have to open your hands. It's the opposite of grasping, holding on tight, controlling. To receive, you have to open your hands. You have to let go. Remember that the first day of the Pongal festival is about cleaning out the old to make way for the new. There's a saying that goes with it. The commencement of Thai paves the way for new opportunities. Letting go of the old to make way for the new is a theme in many of our solstice and New Year's rituals. My family did it on New Year's Eve by the fireplace. We each wrote down and burned something we wanted to let go of, and then we each lit a candle for something we wanted to nurture in the new year. Take a moment to think about that for yourself. Breathe in, breathe out, close your eyes if you wish. What do you hope to manifest within yourself in the new year? What do you want to nurture into being? Patience, compassion, flexibility, a relaxed sense of acceptance and equanimity, an ability to be grounded and present in the moment. What do you need? In contemplating the thing you long for, what gets in the way? What do you need to clear out to make room for that which you wish to cultivate? What do you need to let go of? Anxiety, fear, anger, control. Keep your eyes closed. I'm mixing up images now, but picture this. That thing you want to get rid of, set it on your metaphorical doorstep and sweep it away. Swish, swish, swish. Out you go. Then set down the broom, open your arms wide, and welcome in the thing you wish for. Okay, come on back. I've spoken about that gesture before. I've told you that my personal spiritual challenge is to learn to go from this posture to this posture, embracing life with an arms wide open kind of a gesture. Shirley Travis, one of you, are you here today? No, she's here. Or maybe she's here, but she's not raising her hand. She's in the choir. She recently observed that the arms wide open posture was too much of a stretch, figuratively as well as literally. She said she was just trying to learn to to do this. I liked that. It seemed like a much better starting place, especially when I'm feeling particularly closed, you know, baby steps. Baby steps. First try for this, then maybe I can get to that. Cultivating openness as a spiritual practice. The paradoxical path to abundance is through letting go. It reminds me of something I learned about in divinity school. I had a lot of friends who were studying Eastern religions, especially Hinduism and Buddhism. A bunch of them were learning Sanskrit so they could read the sacred texts in their original language. My friends spoke of the ideal of detachment. I was puzzled by this. I thought most religions were about cultivating love and compassion. Detachment sounded like the opposite of love and compassion. Why would detachment be an ideal? When I read the Bhagavad Gita in one of my classes, an English translation, not in the original Sanskrit, I scrawled arguments in the margins. In the story, the warrior prince Arjuna is counseled by the god Krishna to fight in battle against his own cousins. Arjuna does not want to kill his relatives. Krishna, the god, says he must. What? This was one of Gandhi's favorite books? Proponent of peace and nonviolence? How could that be? It took me a while to understand the metaphoric reading of the Bhagavad Gita and to understand the deeper meaning of the concept of detachment. Attachment to things, wanting to own stuff and hold on to stuff, and the desire to control what is beyond your control, brings suffering. Detachment, letting go of the desire to possess, to control what can't be controlled, frees you from that suffering. Detachment is not apathy. In detachment, you do not cease to care, nor do you cease to act. You do what you can to act for good, letting go of selfish desire and the illusion of total control. It's a bit like the essence of the serenity prayer. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Detachment is acting with wisdom, courage, and serenity. It is the essence of the arms wide open stance. It is the opposite of grasping, controlling, stinginess, holding on. The spirit of Pongal is arms wide open. It is a spirit of openness and abundance. Celebrating abundance can lead to feelings of gratitude, and deeply felt gratitude can inspire generosity. Have you ever felt that way? You become aware of something you have that others don't. You feel lucky and grateful, and you feel moved to share it with others. Abundance, gratitude, generosity. In this way, those fundraisers about whom I said I was suspicious are actually right. An attitude of abundance can have a very real effect. Like in that story about stone soup. The traveler starts with just stone and water, but when all the townspeople are moved to contribute their little bits of vegetables, meat, and rice, a hearty stew is made for all to share. You could see this as a spiritual path, abundance, gratitude, generosity. David Stendhal Rast writes that Hinduism encourages recognizing manifestations of the divine in an enlightened person, a cow, a plant, or even a small object. In Spiritual Literacy, Broussard writes, Hindus take great pleasure in ordinary things as manifestations of Brahman, the divine ground of all being. This is what Krishna was trying to explain to Arjuna, that ultimate enlightenment comes with seeing that the Atman, the self, is a part of the Brahman, that larger divinity. From this perspective, it is easier to take on an attitude of compassionate detachment. Your individual concerns and desires fade a bit. You have a wider perspective on things. It seems to me that this recognition of the divine in all aspects of life goes hand in hand with an attitude of abundance. If you look at life with an eye of appreciation, reverence, and gratitude, you get a sense that life is filled with abundance, and then you are less likely to cling to it when part of it goes away. You trust that you will find another aspect of life that is also beautiful. It seems like it would be freeing to walk through life with that approach, not needing to own or possess or cling to any one particular thing, but open to appreciating everything. Pretty design in the sand, swish, swish, swish. Make another pretty design in the sand. Appreciate without clinging. Take it in without possessing. Take it in, let it brighten your spirit, then let it go, pass it on. I need to insert a little caveat here. I'm not saying that all of life is beautiful. I know suffering. I know human ugliness. The spiritual stance of openness, detachment, equanimity, serenity is good for getting through the hard stuff too. You take it in, do what you can, then let the rest go. Keep on keeping on. When life is hard, when life is good, this is a spiritual challenge and inspiration we can learn from Pongal. Practice a stance of openness. Let go of control. Revel in the abundance and the mess of pots boiling over. Give thanks for what is good. Embrace a spirit of gratitude and generosity. Let us strive to lean away from the attitude of anxiety, tense, negative, stingy, controlling, closed-fisted, holding on. Let us lean into the attitude of abundance, relaxed, grateful, generous, celebratory, open-handed, letting go. So may it be. Amen.